Yeah, I completely agree with you.
I have to disagree with you. Can I disagree with you with all my heart?
Ooh, that's a loaded question.
Whoa. Okay, so...
Gosh, you know, it's interesting. No one's ever asked me this question before, and I'm saying this for the first time, and it's kind of fascinating.
Crazy, huh?
Ladies and gentlemen, am I totally screwed or what?
Yes!
Welcome to Portrait of a Business. I'm your host, Del Williams.
Welcome to Portrait of a Business, and I'm your host, Del Williams. And with me today is Dr. Jennifer Howard. Welcome, my dear.
Welcome to you, too. This is fun. I'm glad we're doing this.
Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's start with the beginning.
Yeah.
Who are you? No. Don't worry, I'll edit that out. Okay, let's start with the beginning. Tell the audience about yourself.
Well, this is somebody calling in. So, start to tell people about myself. Isn't that a great question?
I know, it is. Okay,
well,
how did you get started
psychotherapy?
How did you get started in psychotherapy?
Okay, how I got started as a psychotherapist is that I was an actress in New York. I was an actress, singer, dancer. I actually moved to New York to be a dancer, and I tore the ligaments in my hip and couldn't do the NYU School of the Arts, finish the program. So I ended up doing acting, singing, dancing, and found that I was anxious at auditions. And started in therapy myself to deal with why was I mean, everybody's anxious at auditions, but it felt, you know, incapacitated, and that's back before they had any medication for anything anyway, which was good because it started me on my consciousness journey, as well as getting involved with a metaphysics class in 1980, learning about consciousness and things beyond the ordinary, which brought me into the therapy, which then I really realized that as an actress, what I had wanted to do was really make a difference in people's lives. And most of the things I was auditioning for and doing was not really making a difference in their lives. And unless you're really famous, it's hard to really be able to do that. You know, so I realized that I could be much more good, and it really suits my temperament more. Now, to be talking about something that's really important to me. So my helping people be their best self is very important to me. So I'm so glad it didn't, you know, that the other stuff didn't work out and that I'm doing this now.
Cool. Okay. You know, we deal with a lot with entrepreneurs and people that are, you know, about to take the plunge into business, or they're in business but they're stuck at a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people talk about mindset, where that seems to be the number one factor in people's failure and success. Would you agree with that?
Well, certainly I think we human beings have much more power than we know we have, and that our connection to our thoughts and feelings really do run. I have a thing that I teach called your own programming. So it's, you know, learning what your own programming is from childhood, from karma, let's say, too. That does run the show. And unless we bring that to consciousness and heal it and create a new way to be, a new way to think, we can be stuck in the old programming. And I think everyone has places they need to grow. Some people are just natural at business and make trillions of dollars and have no problems there, but their relationships have trouble. And some people have great relationships and their issues are in their business. So it depends. And I also think there's this over – right now, it seems to be this overzealous, I have to make trillions of dollars in the internet kind of thing going on. And I think – we have to look at what is that about. If we think that's going to fill us up, we're never filled up from the outside. Really, we get filled up from the inside, being that we feel good about what we do and good about who we are. So that's as important as achieving as an entrepreneur. Obviously, you have to achieve enough or you can't be an entrepreneur. You have to go get a job. But does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. All of a sudden, the loudest truck just went by. Anyway, okay.
Bye.
I said the loudest truck just went by.
Hello.
Okay. So Okay, let's talk about that. I've talked to other guests about that, where there are a lot of people that are way focused on money. They don't want to admit they're focused on money, but they focus on it and stuff, and but then they're stuck in it. Or they go, and one of my big pet peeves lately has been people that are buying system after system after system and doing nothing with those systems that they're learning. Except, why is that people don't like to take action? Or they think they'll take action, but then they don't.
Huh. Well, you know, I was thinking about that yesterday. I forgot what I was listening to, but somebody was talking about, I know what I was doing. I was doing a mastermind group that I'm in. And somebody was talking about, you know, having people implement with action. And I think, you know, there's different kinds of people. And some people do action all the time and just run around like a chicken with their head cut off. I think you need to also have the action be pointed toward a direction that's actually fulfilling, that feels like it's connected with your life purpose. So I could imagine that some of these people that do class after class after class after class think they're going to find the answer somehow that's either going to motivate them or is going to make it easy. And what we know is that there's an ease to life, but if we're really going to achieve things, we're going to have our challenges. Everybody's going to have their challenges, and we all have similar and different challenges, depending on who we are and our, you know, childhood upbringing, as to what's difficult for us. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Now, another one of the things that we always talk about, too, is people's propensity to run after get-rich-quick schemes.
Right, right.
Boy, I mean, or even on Twitter, which is where we know each other from, people that want to, you know, get a gazillion followers just to, you know, have them doesn't necessarily mean they want to connect with them or talk to them in any way. They just want to have them. And so they'll go and pay somebody $13 for some kind of, for lack of a better phrase, chain letter type thing.
Oh, yeah?
You know, to get followers.
I didn't even know about that. You can pay somebody $13 to do a chain letter?
Well, it's not a chain letter. It's like a chain follow in this particular case.
Huh.
It's like a chain follow where, you know, you have to follow this person and then follow all these people that they're following and da-da-da-da-da, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and it's like this huge chain. So these people have all these followers, but they're not connecting to it. Why is it that people run after stuff like that, that they don't want to necessarily connect with people, but they want to still be able to say, oh, okay, I have a bunch of followers, or I have this scheme that's going to make me a whole bunch of money, da, 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 that I bought for $9.95, and it's supposed to give me a bridge in Brooklyn. So
right. Well, I think it feels like there's a couple of issues on the table. One is, what does money mean to these people? What does money mean? And what is get rich quick? Boy, those have been going on forever, like the old-fashioned snake oil salesman, you know, that there is no, I don't believe there's a get rich quick scheme that's for real. I believe that slow and steady wins the race. And also, so what? I mean, they show all the statistics that people who win lotto, most of them blow the money and have to go back to work. So, you know, I think that's a fantasy. It's a pie in the sky. And it's also some panacea. If I'm rich, and I thought fame is like this way too now. Everybody's addicted to fame. If I'm famous, I'll be important. So this goes back to their own childhood wounding of what does money mean? What is the meaning of money, and what is the meaning of fame? What are we really trying to get, all of us? What are we really trying to get when we're trying to get money and fame? And I think the followers, I think it depends on somebody's goal. Why are they on Twitter to begin with? And, you know, certainly connecting has been a pleasure with folks like you, and I have other people I've connected to that are just delightful. And I just connected with somebody else today who's just a sweetheart. And but what is the purpose of Twitter? And I think a lot of people, it's like, you know, in high school where people try to get everybody to sign their yearbook or something?
Mm-hmm.
It feels like some of it's like that. Like there's people who just want a lot of numbers to say, somehow it makes them better. It makes them feel like they're validated as a person. And then there's the other people who want a lot of followers because they want to sell a lot, maybe. But you're right. It's some kind of contest, maybe, that who can have the most followers and not connect to anybody. That's kind of a funny contest, isn't it?
It is. It's really funny. So, okay, so we're in your childhood, so forth. And you realize maybe you have issues about concerning money. And it's shaping everything, your actions and so forth. Or maybe you're a spendaholic and you buy every program, which I was talking to Stephanie Frank the other day. And she actually, it was funny, and she actually told one client of hers that she could not buy anything else. Stuff because she was
buying program after program.
And then she had another person who accidentally called her, was trying to return a program that they didn't even know who they bought the program from. And she asked her, well, how much have you spent trying to get rich?
Yeah,
and she has spent $400,000.
No.
Yes. She has spent $400,000 on various programs trying to get rich.
Well, she just should have put that money in the bank and saved it.
Yes. And so she said, well, I can help you with that, but I can't because I refuse to take your money, you know, because you have an addiction and stuff. And he was talking about it from that angle, that the person was addicted to the systems and buying different things and whatever.
Of course.
That they were ever going to use it. So how do you know if you are addicted to, say, programs or taking constant action and that you never really, you know, you're doing stuff, you know, running around with your head cut off, so forth. You're doing stuff, but really are you building anything? How do you know?
Well, you know, there's so many layers to that question. That's such a great question. There's so many layers to everything you've asked me. That's why occasionally I kind of wandered off because I was like, oh, my God, I see this implication. So from the deepest layer, if we're using anything to try to fill ourselves up, that's addiction. That's from the deepest place. That whatever the feelings are that are arising and we're trying to stuff down or fill up, whether it's our emptiness, it's our sadness, whatever feeling it is that we're trying to get rid of by buying programs, shoes, cars, houses, whatever people are trying to do, that's to be looked at. That's a no-win situation. It's the hungry ghost in Buddhism it's talked about, where you're just eating and eating and eating and eating and eating and there's nowhere for it to go. Now, how do people know? Well, you know, if you think, I don't really have a rule, but in order to build consciousness to the deepest level so we can be happy, just forget that we want to be deep. We just want to be happy and peaceful. Question everything. Why am I buying this? Why have I done 6 programs and none of them have worked? What am I doing here? What am I trying to achieve? What's under it? That's always the greatest question. What's under that drive to achieve? Is it because you wanted mommy and daddy's approval? Is it because you felt like you're a loser? What is under that? So, you know, there's not like a hard and fast rule. If you bought 6 programs, you're now an addict. But what are you trying to prove? And when will you be content? And what would it look like when you were content? What would your life look like once you've reached this quote-unquote pinnacle of wealth and fame and whatever you're looking for? What would your life look like and feel like? And create that life today. You know, there's a lot of things we can do to feel. Obviously, we have to have enough money to pay our rent and our heat. There was an article I read recently. Actually, it was a blog on the Huffington Post. Ken Dykewald, I think, was talking about there's been all these studies that past a certain level of wealth, there's no more happiness out of it. So we need to be able to buy our vitamins if we need it, and, you know, clothes and buy new shoes. And there's a certain level we need to reach in order to feel like we're somewhat comfortable. And after that, nobody gets happier after that. So what is the fantasy of all this get rich quick, achieve? What do they think it's going to do for them? What do we all, I mean, I say they, but, you know, all of us, what do we think it's going to do for us?
Yes, that answers the question. Do you think part of it may be that particularly in Generation X and Generation Y, we have been particularly labeled as pretty much having no focus, having, you know, I mean, your baby boomers had the Vietnam War, they had all the other different things. You know, the generations before had the other wars and so forth. And this generation really, and mine, have virtually been kind of lost, I guess, as some would say. Do you think that plays a factor in it, that there really is, that they don't have an identity? That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, well, I think it's an interesting question. I actually wrote something about that and can't remember everything I said now, but I think what happened is often that generation was raised by boomers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe the generation a little bit before, but a lot of boomers raised those folks. And, you know, I think there was almost like too much, too many dance lessons, too many, it's like, not for everyone, but somewhat, it's like too much. And you're right, it was lack of focus. It's like, what is our calling? But on the other hand, Del, I think everyone has to ask that question. Because certainly a war doesn't give somebody a calling. It can give somebody an external reason to gather as a group, but it doesn't give an individual their internal calling. I don't think the boomers know their callings any better than anybody else. I think that's an individual journey that you have to decide to take to know who you really are. I don't think anybody wakes up knowing who they really are. I think it's you take it on as a journey. I hope everyone takes it on to the degree that they can, so they can really be fulfilled. So yes, as a generation, there is a sense of that. At the same time, I think it's universal. I think it's a universal thing that everybody has to find who they really are and not use the outside as a way to do it. And I don't think that your generation or generations under you are any more guilty of that than any other generation. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay, let's talk about values. One of the things they have found is that women business owners particularly, you know, start most of the businesses, and within 5 years, most of them have failed.
Oh, I didn't know that.
What they found was that one of the contributing things was pricing. Pricing.
Uh-huh.
Don't worry, I'm getting to my point.
No, I'm not worried about that. I'm just trying to understand the word pricing. Uh-huh, I'm with you.
Yes, was pricing. What they found was women consistently priced their services lower.
That makes sense, yeah.
Than what their male competitor would do. Even though the market would bear the male competitor's price, the women consistently lowered their price. Why do you think that is? Why do women tend to not allow themselves to earn what they need to earn, you know, for the skills that they have?
Yeah. Well, I would think it would be, you know, kind of environmental self-esteem or, you know, social self-esteem. I think women probably confuse compassion with codependence, so they feel they've got to take care of the other, meaning I've got to keep my price low. I mean, I've had so many people say to me, oh, well, they can't afford that. Well, how do you know they can't afford that? And, you know, so women kind of get caught in taking care of the customer instead of seeing the value in what they're giving. And I'm not saying you have to go the other way and rip them off, but certainly to know the value of who you are and the value of what you're, the service that you're offering. And I wonder in those statistics, were the women the breadwinners? Were they alone and have to make a living, or were they, raising children and doing this or something else, and that's why they could give up? Because there's a way, if you're really feel like this is your bread and butter, there's a way that I think you tackle it in a way that's like, oh, I got to survive, I've got to charge this. So you have to push through that.
That makes sense.
I mean,
So what do you do with one of our, you know, as a freelance writer, one of the things I see a lot, because there are tons of assignments. You know, if I wanted to make $5 an article, I can rack up a ton just in writing $5 articles.
That'd be silly, yeah. As good
exactly.
as you are, that'd be a waste of your time.
I think, yeah. But that's not the point. The point of the question is that what we have found is that a lot of companies are marketing to women to write for them and do services for them and whatever. And, of course, you know, the big envelope stuffing scam and all that other stuff. Skip that. But now we have women who are, you know, who want to, say, be legitimate writers. But a company may come up, oh, see your name published, and just write us 50 articles and we'll give you $10. And they will take it. So it goes back to, again, what you were talking about, undervaluing,
yes,
not seeing their worth. And some, I think, in this case, some who want an easy route into publishing. That's my theory, too.
Sure.
An easy route into it. It's like, okay, well, you know, if I have to sell my soul to do this and whatever, even though nobody will see it, okay, here. But,
well, it's like a young therapist, you know, is going to charge a whole lot less than I would charge.
Mm-hmm.
But you're going to get what you pay for.
Mm.
So, and maybe it's worth the time of a young therapist to charge very little because they're trying to get experience. So for a young writer who just needs some articles under their belt, go at it. But somebody who's experienced, such as yourself and other people, I would think you need to say, you know, can't do it. If you want to pay more, I can. But otherwise, find yourself a young writer.
Makes
you know,
sense.
I think and knowing your own bottom line. I mean, what do people need to live? You know, I need to make a certain amount so I can keep the heat on in the winter. I don't live in California like you. I live in New York. It's cold.
Yeah, that's true. But California is just as expensive. You know, just as expensive without the heat.
Without
the heat. We always need air conditioning, so
I know,
the opposite
extreme. I'm teasing. I'm just being funny. But I'm just saying that, you know, you have to know your own bottom line, and if you have to make X dollars to survive, I mean, everybody needs to know what their budget is. What do they need to make? That's part of manifesting, too. You have to know what do you want to manifest, what is, and work with the insides to make room to manifest that, and what is your bottom line by which you're not willing to go below in terms of pricing. And, you know, I think, you know, get everybody, you know, find a good counselor or a coach or somebody who can help you work through your own issues so you can get your worth. Everybody deserves that. And people also, people value things that they pay more for. I'm not saying to ridiculous amounts, not to greed, but people I remember years ago I gave a talk. Oh, this was 20 years ago. I gave a talk, and it was free. And the only person who came was my husband at the time. And the next month I charged $10, and I had 25 people. So people don't value things when they're free.
Hmm. That's interesting.
You know what I mean?
Yes. Now, if people wanted to contact you, where would they find you online?
Oh. www.drjenniferhoward.com, and I love people who ask me good questions that I can write juicy articles about. And please sign up for my e-zine. It's free, and my meditation room that's really quite beautiful and peaceful. And and if you're interested in any kind of session or anything, you can call me about that. But are we done?
No. I have another question.
Okay, good.
What, are we done?
No. Oh my gosh, no! I'm having so much. I mean, it's fun talking to you. You give good questions, girl.
Thanks. Okay, next question.
Yes.
Someone is looking for a therapist. How do they know what to look for? I mean, unfortunately, therapists, you know, have kind of an interesting, you know, reputation. And it depends on who you are. And then, of course, you have all the different psychologies that people use, the Freudians, the Jungs, and blah, 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 blah. How do people know what to look for if they're looking for a therapist?
Yeah, that's so hard, isn't it? First of all, I would say that, you know, there are some really good self-trained therapists, but as a general rule, I would say that they're credentialed, that they have a degree, that they're licensed in the state that you're in. I would, you know, if they have a website, check out their other trainings. Have they done more up-to-date training? Have they been to an institute? It depends on who they are. You know, if you're an MD, most MDs You know, it's really medical training, and they learn to really help with medicine and in the hospitals. It's a very different training. And even PhD in clinical ends up being, very clinical-oriented. But if they've, if they've done institutes after their schooling, after an MSW, if they've done an institute training of some sort, psychoanalytic or some kind of underpinnings, and then learning all the new energy psychologies, EFT and Sedona and all those important energy psychologies that can be important. And I have obviously a real spiritual underpinning, and certainly not everybody has to have that. But, having done their work themselves and making sure they're in supervision, that's another big one. Ask the therapist when you interview them, are they in supervision? So how they would find is look at that, but also ask friends. You know, that's kind of the best way. Start asking people, look, I know somebody's looking for a therapist, or I'm looking for a therapist. Do you know, my girlfriend Sally went to somebody, was she good? And then interview them. Go there. Sit with them. Feel into it. Or I do a lot of phone work, but it's usually word of mouth with the phone. But, sit with them. Feel into them. Do you feel connected? Do you think they're connected with you? Or is what they're saying helpful? I mean, a lot of times the first session is a lot of history, but often it can be very insightful and helpful. Are they insightful? Do they understand me? Do I feel like they get me? Do they give me something to chew on in between? Do they give me books to read? Do they, do I feel like they really care? Do they say something that really helps me think?
That makes sense. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's give you a nice little scenario.
Okay.
You have a person who, they've done 50 programs. Okay, yeah. 50 programs,
meaning about entrepreneurial stuff?
Yes. They've done 50 programs. Okay, I'll do 10. I'll be nice. They've done 10 programs. They have maybe taken minuscule steps towards doing anything on them. They do not have any monetary, have not had any monetary return on anything that they have done, whatever. And they feel like they're supposed to be an entrepreneur, but of course the money is not aligning with that calling. So where do you begin with someone like that?
I would want to ask them, what entrepreneurial thingy have they been wanting to do? I mean, there's a million ways to be an entrepreneur, right?
True.
Are they trying to open up a hardware store, or are they, wanting to sell widgets online? I'd want to understand what they want to do, why they want to do it, what are they, what's their fantasy about doing this entrepreneurial thing. I think a lot of people have a fantasy that they're going to be an entrepreneur and they're not going to work much. Ha, ha, ha.
No, that's the biggest myth. It's like the sucker, You work more, but okay, cool.
Right. So it isn't that you can't learn how to delegate and all that good stuff, but, I think these people who say I'm only working 5 hours a week and I'm making $1 million, I wonder if they have a trust fund. But anyway, I would want to understand their thinking behind all of this and their feelings behind all of it. What is their fantasy? What is their wishes and their hopes and their dreams? And then we'll start with what do they think they've done wrong? Well, they've done so little to do it. Why is that? Are they scared of the success? Are they scared of failing? Are they too tired? Are they having to work their other job and they're just too tired to do this? Or, what's keeping them from implementing some of this? People are scared of failure and people are scared of success.
Okay. No. Tell me this, bouncing off that question.
Good.
How do you know which one you're afraid of? If you're afraid of failure or success, how do you know which one it is?
Well, you might be both, but you could imagine yourself, just do an imaginal exercise, imagining yourself being exactly where you want to be. Doing exactly what you want to do, and it's all falling into place, and then just know where you're imagining going. Do you then start worrying about something? Do you then start thinking about something? Are the angels flying you around the room? Is it so beyond reality that it's, could never happen anyway? Where does that take you? And see what unearthing that and do some journaling about it, and do the same with, you know, failing. Also, look at your own language. Oh, that'll never work. Well, I can't do that. Well, that's ridiculous. You know, look at your languaging. You know, maybe you are picking things that will never work, but that's interesting in and of itself. Why are you picking, you know, it's like putting all your money on number eight at the you know, what's it called? Casino.
Roulette?
Yes. At the casino, you know, if you're going to put everything on number eight, that's probably not going to work well for you. You know, so what are they picking to do? And why are they picking something so impossible? Or if they're not picking something impossible, why aren't they doing it? So.
Now, one of, I think Lolly Daskal once told me that it was, that she felt like it was, that people have the fear of failure, yes.
Uh-huh.
But it's from the standpoint of that they don't want the response, the fear of success, I'm sorry. But it's from the standpoint of that they don't want the responsibility that comes with success. What does that mean?
Well, maybe that's true. I don't know. I would have to ask, you know, that would be an individual thing. You can't blanket everyone. But, you know, well, it kind of goes back to what I said a while ago, Dale, that fantasy of they're gonna, you know, put a few tweets out and put some, you know, tiny URLs out of some business they're in, and it's going to just take off immediately, and they're not going to have to do the work. So that would be right. That's a responsibility that everything thinks responsible. Even if you have wealth, it's responsibility. You have to take care of the wealth. You have to figure out where you're going to invest it. You have to figure out where you're going to put it. You have to, not that that's a bad thing, but it's still, you know, life is, as adults, we have to be responsible. So that's an interesting point. Are people just trying to get away from responsibility and being an adult, and they think if they do this entrepreneurial thing, they can go be kids again? I don't mean that they're intellectually thinking this, but I mean emotionally. Does that make sense? That may be what it is. And then they have to help themselves grow up. Nothing's magical.
True. Well, something I read yesterday is in Larry Winget's book, what was it? People Are Idiots and I Can Prove It. Fun title. You have to know Larry. But anyway,
okay.
One of the things he brought out was that if you show me your actions, I'll show you why your life is the way it is. And because he said your actions are aligning with what you really believe about to be true for you and what you want and so forth. He says, because you can tell me all day what you want, but your actions are going to tell me, are going to show me what you really want. What do you think?
Are they going to show you certainly the results of your own wounding? I think that's a little overly simplified, that they're going to show you what you really want. I think people can really want to succeed but be completely paralyzed and unable to do the next thing until they get some help and support and they can heal. So, yes, actions are the end result of all the manifestation. Manifestation comes out of nothingness into somethingness and into thought and then into feelings and then into actions, right? So certainly our actions show where we actually are emotionally, mentally, spiritually. You know, where are we stuck? The actions will show it. But does it show us what we really want? I don't think that's necessarily true. It shows you where you are and where you're stuck.
Well, I think what his point was that, you know, money, for example, you're
uh-huh.
saying, you know, you want to save and you want to buy a house and blah, 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 but then you're blowing all your money. Your action is not aligning up with what you say you want.
That's right.
That's what his point is.
Well, I think that's absolutely correct. I mean, but then you have to look at why is that not happening? What are you doing or what are you thinking or what are you feeling that keeps you from saving some money? You know, I think it's hopelessness. Sometimes people feel like it's hopeless. They can't think long term. They're addicted again, so they have to spend every penny that's in their pocket. They can't wait for the long term goal. I mean, I think as a society, we are completely out of balance with long range planning versus short range gains. We completely behave addictively as a society. I got to have that white blouse today. Really, do you? And I think that's something that the generation before me was really better at because they went to the Depression. That's actually a couple of generations above me. But anyway, they went to the Depression, and I think they learned how to delay gratification, you know. So, yes, actions will show where you are, and it will show what you're sending out as your intention. And do you want to change that intention? Well, you might have to change the belief systems and the feelings and everything that's connected with that so you can shift that intention and really mean it. Like that's what he's saying, right?
Yes. So, okay, one of the other things Suzanne and I were talking about one time, Suzanne Evans, was people being in overwhelm. And, okay, again, back to the, I have six programs, or skipping the program. They have, on Twitter particularly,
mm-hmm.
You can, get a piece here, a piece there from other people. This person is doing teleseminars. This person's writing ebooks. This person is doing podcasts, whatever. And some people get themselves into overwhelm because they decide to try to do them all at the same time. When then they don't wind up not doing any of it, or they're always in the process of, okay, we're moving that direction, but we're really not there. So how do you deal with somebody who does get themselves into overwhelm? Because they don't know how to, okay, this is a great idea, but maybe not now or not for me. get somebody to that place where they learn, they don't have to do it all? There you go. That's a good one. Have to do it all.
You don't have to do it all, and you certainly can't do it all at once. So I think I know for me, there's a lot of things, projects that I really want to do, and it's called time. So I do have to look at my timeline and say, okay, I'm putting this aside again, and I'm getting this done first because of circumstances or timing, or I have an assistant who can write right now or do this or do that, so I'm going to do this, and then I'm going to do that. So it's prioritizing, I would say, and also forgiving ourselves. I mean, not putting off – it's one thing – to be procrastinating because you're fearful. It's another thing that you're putting your 5 or 6 hours in, you're using your time wisely, and you can, I'm saying like people who already work another job. Let's say you already work another job 40 hours, and you're putting another, or 30 hours, or whatever, and you're putting another 30 hours or 40 hours in your business as an entrepreneur. You can only do so much. Try to work wisely, smartly, and you might have to have some coaching on what that means, right? But prioritizing and saying, wait a minute, what's more important? Is it more important to get the ebook out first? Strategizing. Is it more important I get the ebook out first, or is it more important that I get the tapes done or the podcast? What's going to give me the biggest splash for where I want to go? What's my smartest strategy here? And I think that's a very, I think all of us struggle with that. Like, what's my smartest strategy right now with what I want to accomplish? And doing your best. And walking forward as hard as you can, one step in front of the other is here I go, and then going, okay, that wasn't a great strategy. So you got to reevaluate. You can't put it in concrete.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. Okay, final question. This question I've come to ask all my guests lately.
What shoe size do I have? Well, let me tell you. No.
5 years from now. 5 years from now, what is Dr. Jennifer Howard doing?
5 years from now. Okay. I am a regular on some television thing that I'm getting to weave in my spirituality. I have 3 books published. I'm teaching and lecturing and helping as many people as I can. This brings tears to my eyes, Dale. It feels like
Walter's moment.
Yeah, it's my calling to. I really believe now that I'm like a piece of a tea bag. I've been in that water long enough. I'm done, and I need to be giving. So I want to give as much as I can, and then I'll feel like when I die, I will have done what I came to do. So I'm hoping I can give through different mediums because of my acting training. The writing is, I'm learning. I'm not as good as you, but I'm learning writing, and I have things to say. So I want to share those and help people. Help people move forward in their lives, help people feel more deeply connected to their true self. Be as giving and kind as I can to as many people as I can. So that's, I will have had books published. I'll be teaching more. I'll have some television thing, maybe a weekly stint somewhere, and be doing more radio interviews with my friend Bill. And I don't know. I think that's probably all I can think of. I'll be feeling good. I'll be healthy.
Cool. That'll work. And thank you so much for being on Portrait of a Business. It's been great.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Thank you for joining us on Portrait of a Business today. We hope that you found our tips and advice from our guests to be helpful to you. And please do not hesitate to contact us. You can look at our site, portraitofabusiness.info, for more information.